Next speaker is Chadron Renderos, and she has received her MPH from that little humble school, the Yale School of Epidemiology and Public Health, and has been a consultant in their health services division for 6 years. She currently serves as a program manager and capacity building assistant to the Office on Women's Health HIV program, where she guarantees assistance with integrating gender-responsive approaches in their HIV prevention program. So thank you and welcome.
Morning again, everybody. I'm going to actually use this mic because I'm much more soft-spoken. So I'm co-presenting this with two of my colleagues, one of whom is here and I may rely on for some questions, Naima Kozier, who's also with JSI from the Atlanta office, as well as Robert Foley from the National Native American AIDS Prevention Center. So go ahead, I have no financial relationships to disclose. So what I want to talk about today is, one, discuss some of the opportunities and challenges and promising practices that we've discovered from the efforts of a lot of community-based organizations across the country in their efforts to really integrate gender into their HIV prevention programs, as well as discuss our experience as capacity building assistance providers providing CBA to these grantees. So the Office on Women's Health funded both JSI and the National Native American AIDS Prevention Center for what they called Project HOPE, which stands for Project Helping Organizations Provide Effective HIV Prevention Programs for Women and Girls. And so our charge was to increase both the individual and organizational capacity of those OWH grantees to provide more gender-responsive HIV prevention programs. So I just want to define what I mean by gender-responsive program before we go any further. The working OWH definition that they use is that it's a program that takes into account the needs of women and girls, as well as men and boys, as it relates to not just biological or sex differences, but also gender differences. So these are programs that are going to consider how gender norms, gender roles, and inequalities all influence HIV risk, etc., and take action to address those things specifically. And their definition around gender integration is really not just the strategy, but also the process that addresses those differences and inequalities between women and men and girls and boys during all stages of the program cycles, from planning to design to implementation, as well as monitoring and evaluation. And of course, at various levels, so both the organizational level, the staff level, the program level, and in terms of how you craft services. So the kind of training and technical assistance that we provided over 3 years working on that cooperative agreement was from, you know, the basic: what is gender, how does gender influence HIV, how do you integrate the concept of gender into your programs, gender analysis. We did a gender responsiveness training of facilitators for program facilitators. And we also provided much more intensive kind of on-site tailored training and technical assistance to some grantees, including doing organizational and programmatic gender assessments, as well as doing curriculum reviews. So most of these grantees they basically adapted evidence-based programs like SISTA and programs that are out there and used. So we did a lot of curriculum reviews to assess how far they were integrating gender into these programs as they adapted them. So I'm going to start with kind of our reflections from the JSI and NAPSE perspective as providing capacity building assistance to these grantees over the 3 years. So there are a couple lessons learned that we've gathered over the years. One is for the need for gender integration work to begin from the needs assessment phase of program development. Also, you know, specifically that, you know, this whole gender integration process has to be included in RFPs and clearly stated. There are a lot of programs that do this kind of work, but it has to be stated from the outset. We thought that would have been important in our experience and important moving forward. It was also challenging for our grantees to know what the end goal or what a program should look like, considering that gender integration in and of itself requires a lot of tailoring. And so it was hard for people to know exactly where you were supposed to end out, given the organic process of tailoring your program to make it gender responsive within the specific context that you live in, that the women and girls live in. And what we also found was from organic experiences that really intensive tailored training and technical assistance rather than more distance, remote type training and TA webinars, things like that, seem to be much more effective, seem to be the ideal model for this kind of work. But, you know, we were limited in our capacity to provide that kind of really on-site intensive training and TA given or funding. But in our experience with our grantees, it was clear that that was the most effective and ideal way to go about doing this kind of training. The other reflection that we had is our higher capacity community-based organizations had an easy time translating whatever high-level training and technical assistance that we did at a webinar level, at that level, into implementation right away. So, you know, that was also an important takeaway for us to note. And also, although we had 3 years, this was also an important kind of outcome from our process, is really considering the time it takes for leadership and staff to buy into the whole concept of integrating gender into their work. So most of these grantees had been doing running evidence-based programs with women for a number of years. So adding this layer took a certain amount of time for both leadership to buy in as well as staff to buy in to how important this was, and then to move through the stages of kind of learning and then implementing. So really building in time for that whole process was important. So we did several key informant interviews this year as the whole project was wrapping up with our grantees to get their perspectives on the experience of receiving capacity building assistance, on their experience with running evidence-based programs that integrated gender in a more concrete way. And so I wanted to share with you some promising practices from that, as well as challenges based on their experience over the 3 years. And so these are some things that they have shared with us. All of the grantees basically reported that this was a necessity. So there weren't many grantees that were like, this doesn't make any sense, we don't need to do this, we've been running SIS the way we run it, and it's fine, we don't need this layer, this level of perspective. All of our grantees were saying that this is absolutely a necessity to do this, to have programs that are more gender responsive. They also stressed the importance of, there were a few grantees that did needs assessments that did integrate gender. It wasn't mandatory for all grantees to do so, but the ones that did note how important it was to include focus groups and so on that would involve the gender-related adaptations that are specific to that context in that community. Because our grantees served you know, African-American women and girls, Latina women and girls, Native American women and girls. So there's a broad diversity in terms of the kind of grantees that women were, that these programs were working with. So that was one definite promising practice that they all named as being really important, as well as getting support from the organization. A lot of grantees found it difficult to implement gender-responsive programs without really strong support from the organization. Some grantees we trained the board of a couple of our organizations and went to that level. And where there was organizational level buy-in or buy-in at that level, they had a much easier time kind of seamlessly integrating this into the DNA of their organization, from including that whole concept in ongoing supervision of their program staff and bringing that level of specificity. So that was really an important takeaway for them too as well. And also stressing the importance of this whole basic understanding of what gender means and how it influences HIV risk as being a really crucial and important first step. All grantees shared that as being very important, both for their staff to kind of go through that process and then to be able to convey that to their program recipients. The fourth piece is what we observed is some grantees, especially the high capacity ones, naturally made the leap between integrating gender in their HIV programs to integrating it in our teen pregnancy prevention programs and integrating it in other prevention programs where it made sense. And that was that kind of work was happening a little bit unbeknownst to us, but grantees were also using those same principles, concepts, and content to translate it into other areas where it makes a lot of sense to do that. A lot of grantees that worked with young people, and even the ones that worked with adult women, upon reflection said, you know, this work really needs to happen in adolescence, at the stage when young people are still deciding what they believe in, what they buy into, what norms they subscribe to or they don't. And so lots of grantees basically reflected to us that, you know, this work should happen then. And the literature supports that as well. They also shared that, of course, this doing this work is important, and ideally it should be in person and tailored. The idea of doing this kind of gender self-reflection work is that it requires, it can challenge people's worldview by asking people to really critically examine gender norms, and it can be, some people can perceive it as a confrontational process. So a lot of grantees kind of reflected that it was really helpful to have skilled facilitators hold them through that process of grappling with this kind of content. And the seventh piece was just how important a thorough analysis of local gender norms and how local gender dynamics play out in these respective communities as being absolutely essential. There's no cookie cutter way to look at how gender norms are operating in these different contexts. It's very varied, and so a lot of grantees share that. That is really important, having that thorough analysis up front to figure out what's the landscape of gender dynamics impacting women and girls across these different contexts, and using that to inform how you design your program and what kind of sessions, you know, how you integrate the gender responsive content. And a lot of grantees, some with our assistance, some without our assistance, went through a process of taking a lot of the education that we provided and took steps to integrate that through their organization. So again, a lot of them took the opportunity to bring in not just their HIV program facilitators to our trainings, but they also brought in teen pregnancy prevention grantees. They also brought in their program facilitators that worked with men. So they used the opportunity to really integrate this throughout the organization as a whole. Another important reflection of grantees was just the importance of being able to have evidence-based program facilitators not just understand the importance of gender responsiveness, but really reflect that in day-to-day programming. So the importance of really being able to walk your talk and having staff go through a process of self-reflection themselves and getting straight on what their own gender biases are, etc., before then stepping into a room and providing that sort of education and creating that space to allow women and men, or women in this case, to critically examine gender norms themselves. So that was definitely a huge takeaway. Most of our grantees shared that if facilitators did not do that self-reflection work, that the kind of content that they would provide would really resonate hollow with women who they are attempting to serve. So that was definitely another takeaway. And in terms of the challenges, quickly, some grantees struggled again with, like, how valid are my evidence-based programs are now that I'm adapting for gender, I'm adapting to make it language appropriate, I'm adapting it to make it culturally sensitive, age appropriate, et cetera, et cetera, and the list goes on. And how do you know if this is, you know, if the work that you're doing and the changes that you're making are still valid? Again, a lack of resources. We wanted to go on site and provide really intensive training and technical assistance, but that in and of itself was really difficult for us to do, both from the financial perspective as well as time and staffing issues. A lot of grantees felt like this work should involve men directly. That was a huge takeaway, and all grantees felt like if we're going to be doing really gender transformative work, that men had to be included, that they had to be included in these conversations where we're asking women to critically look at gender norms and how it influences HIV risk and lots of other risk-taking behaviors. So that was the ask of most women in our program. The Office on Women's Health serves women and girls, does not serve men. But all of our grantees said men have to be included in this kind of work. There's no way that this makes sense without including men in this same process. Another issue that arose was just the complexity of integrating gender while also intersecting issues related to race, ethnicity, faith, culture, etc. A lot of our grantees work in faith-based organizations, work in churches, and are providing this kind of education, which is a direct affront to a lot of gender norms can be religiously informed. And so just even doing that work, there was a lot of clashes that happened there, which are to be expected. So that level of complexity was difficult for some of our grantees to manage. Again, integrating gender funders shun adaptation to evidence-based programs. The Office on Women's Health is very open to adaptations, but not all funders are, so that issue. Some of our ideas around opportunities for gender-responsive work in the United States, we definitely think, from the JSI and NAFSI perspective anyhow, is that it's really important to go beyond individual behavior and begin addressing broader social determinants that affect everyone, not just women and girls, but men and boys, as well as being more intentional about bringing international HIV AIDS best practices to the United States as it relates to gender integration. We know that a lot of what we're doing is borrowed from the international HIV work around gender, but even taking that to another level is still important, and using non-traditional approaches. And with that, I'll end because I know I'm out of time here.
You mentioned transgender. Is there any reason you completely ignore that issue, or?
Well, we certainly served. The primary focus of the Office of Women's Health is to serve women and girls. There were a few transgendered women that were in some of these programs, and it definitely was an issue that we were grappling with, that program facilitators were grappling with, and grantees that face those issues. We certainly provide much more one-on-one training and technical assistance to those grantees. So that certainly did come up, and there were a lot of transgendered, or few facilitators and program recipients. So that certainly did come up across our work over the 3 years, for sure. And I think somebody over here had a question. Sure.
Yeah, thank you very much for your presentation.
Mm-hmm.
I was also wondering, was there ever any concern that some gender stereotypes would actually be reinforced, or was there, if you know, you mentioned about people examining their own feelings about gender and what it was.
Mm-hmm.
Was there any
So a huge part of the work that we did when looking at gender was building a shared analysis of what gender means and getting into that layer of complexity that you're talking about. So, you know, from talking about the concept of multiple gender identities as that exists in Native American communities, and really getting into, it's not just a binary thing, it's not just you're a woman or you're a baby. So we would explore that together and essentially as a group build that analysis, leaving room for people to entirely disagree. Not everybody's going to look at this the same way, but providing the space to allow for that richness of analysis and building from there. So certainly a part of the analysis was looking at how some HIV prevention programs do in fact reinforce gender stereotypes and can look like male bashing and can look like making women to seem like the passive, you know, recipients of HIV, the, you know, those norms do appear in prevention programs that we may run on intentionally. So what we were trying to do was bring awareness to it, to have people reflect on it again, shine a light on that, to be able to more critically examine how in the work that we can be doing, we can be reinforcing gender stereotypes sometimes to then be able to do things differently. So all of that critical analysis would be happening in that basic gender, what is gender, what does this mean type training.
Great. Thank you so much.